from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Montgomery, in today for Mina Kim. It's now official. Hillary Clinton will face Donald Trump this fall when Americans select a new president. We'll discuss this historic battle and what to expect as both candidates return to the campaign trail. Also, we'll look at the crackdown in Turkey. Is this country heading towards dictatorship, and how will that affect the war against ISIS? Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Montgomery, in today for Mina Kim. Well, in case you missed it, Hillary Clinton accepted the Democratic Party's nomination for president last night, becoming the first female candidate of a major party. We'll discuss this milestone and look at how Clinton pulled Bernie Sanders into her camp and whether his supporters will follow. And of course, what to expect in the Clinton versus Trump campaign now that both conventions are over. We're joined this morning by Carla Marinucci. She is Politico's California Playbook reporter, former political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. She joins us from the studios of UC Berkeley's Journalism School. Hey there, Carla.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Scott is on his way back from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, and I think we've caught you at the airport, Scott.
Yes, you have, Michael. So if you hear any PA announcements, that's what it is.
Well, we'll keep an eye on your flight. Scott, actually, let's start with you. You've now made it through two pretty intense, dare I say, grueling conventions. Clearly, last night's event at the Democratic National Convention made history. What were your takeaways?
Well, I think, first of all, the Republicans, of course, held their convention in Cleveland, and the Democrats were in Philadelphia. And I think that the Democrats made really good use of where they were. Philadelphia, of course, is the birthplace of the nation. And I thought Hillary Clinton, and really throughout the week, the Democratic Party did a good job of making the most of the history of the city. You know, last night, Hillary Clinton was talking about the founding fathers and how they gathered there so long ago, and they were just really a bunch of disparate colonies, some wanting to remain loyal to the king. And they decided in the end it was best to stick together as a nation. And what a great metaphor for our times today, where it seems like we're coming apart at the seams and different parts of the country are going in two different directions. And I think in general, the Democrats this week painted a much more positive, of course, image of the country. Last night, those chants of USA, USA with the flags when General Allen was talking was extraordinary. I mean, there was so much imagery and quoting of Ronald Reagan at a Democratic convention, and the veterans and all the ways and the symbolism that the Democrats sort of co-opted from the Republican Party, in part because of the sort of convention that the Republicans had in Cleveland. It was very, very negative, of course, and dark. As Hillary Clinton said, we've gone from Reagan's morning in America to midnight in America. And the contrast was really stark. Now, that said, you know, fear is a very powerful emotion, and anxiety. And so I think these two conventions have laid out in very stark terms not only a different vision for the country, but a path forward.
Carla Marinucci, I want to interested in getting your thoughts. Obviously, a historic, not just last night, but really historic couple of weeks in many ways. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Scott. I think, you know, the Republican convention was something that was watched by 25 million people, but the Democrats really stole the playbook this week. This was a big tent convention. It was a Morning in America convention. And when Hillary Clinton entered last night, I mean, she had a very high bar to hit. She had this was a convention that had a lineup of just tour de force speeches by Michelle Obama, by Vice President Biden, by the president. And she had this historic moment. You know, 167 million women, as she mentioned, she was representing, introducing herself as the first woman nominee of a major party. And I think, look, when you look at how the Democrats manage this, there's no wonder that I think it was a former GOP chair, Michael Steele, said this was the greatest Republican convention ever staged. I mean, you had parents of the military, you had disabled activists, you had a huge lineup of Americans from all walks of life, and then you had the agenda, which really came, like, the Republicans couldn't have done it better. Military defense, you had patriotism, you had American exceptionalism, you know, as Scott said, morning in America. The production values were there. I think, and maybe Scott, you'll agree with me on this, I think the moment of this convention, though, was the father of the fallen Muslim soldier. And Hillary Clinton alluded to this. Between that message of Mr. Khazir Khan standing up there and saying to Donald Trump, have you even read the Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy. That was a grand
very
slam out of the park. Yeah.
That was a very emotional moment, I thought, and really taking it directly to Donald Trump in a very personal and very emotional way, I think, in a way that some of the politicians really can't do. I also was struck just by the spectacle. I mean, it made the Republican convention sort of look like a high school assembly in some ways.
It's funny, you know, being in the hall at both locations, I thought that visually just standing on the floor that the Republican convention looked better, but seeing it on TV, actually, I thought it was extraordinarily good. Both of them were, really, but the Democrats with all those red, white, and blue balloons, and yeah, as Carla said, this tour de force lineup of speakers, and I think also, you know, it shows the advantage of going second. Now, I know this convention had been planned well in advance, but I'm sure it was fine-tuned very much as a reaction to what they saw in Cleveland, and I think they took full advantage of that.
I just think that the Republican convention really sort of underscored Donald Trump's team and lack of political experience in these things. I mean, look, when you talk about the Democrats and the Clintons, they've been doing this for decades. And the production values really showed. When you have this, also the lineup of Hollywood names, athletes and so forth they had, you can't discount how those names reach voters. When you talk about somebody like Katy Perry, who has more Twitter followers than anyone in the world, she does reach young women voters. I think all of that sort of added up to a win for Democrats. And we're going to see how the TV numbers are. But all week long, the Democrats have been beating the Republicans in TV ratings.
And talk to me a little bit about the role of the California delegation. We heard some speeches this week. And, you know, what kind of a role did they play, particularly in shaping the platform?
Well, certainly the delegation is very large. And because of the vote and the way that delegates are apportioned in California, it wasn't quite 50-50, you know, but there were a lot of Sanders supporters. And earlier in the week, and actually the week before at the Rules Committee, they very much were involved. Congresswoman Barbara Lee, among others, very involved in getting into the platform some of the things that Hillary Clinton alluded to last night, including raising the minimum wage to $15, student loans, and making college affordable for young people, trying to get money out of politics. All those things were in the platform because of the Bernie Sanders folks, and certainly California played a large role in that. That said, you know, Monday and Tuesday were like the wheels were coming off because, especially at the breakfasts, the delegation breakfasts, it was pandemonium, Michael. I mean, there were demonstrations, there was booing. Every time Hillary Clinton's name or Tim Kaine's name were mentioned at that breakfast, there was booing and hissing from a sizable, maybe 40%
of
the room.
Oh, yeah, you could hear it very well on TV.
Well, I'm saying at the breakfast, though. Just the California delegation alone. And so, you ask what role did they play. They were the most, I think, raucous, delegation at the convention. And when you put them all in one room, it was really something.
Well, and getting to the convention floor, I was reading this morning about the way in which they essentially used floor whips to kind of shut down the Bernie folks who were making a lot of noise early in the convention. Did you see any of that?
Absolutely. And the whips were, and both parties have, you know, delegation whips, and they're all sort of given. In Cleveland, it was much easier because the entire California delegation were Trump delegates, so they were all on the same page. But, yeah, I think they were perhaps taken aback by, I don't think they knew exactly what the Sanders folks were going to do. And when they became as vocal as they did, especially on the Pacific Trade Agreement and other things, war was a big issue. They were chanting no more war when Leon Panetta was speaking, which sort of threw him off his game a little bit. Yes, I think they really organized and thought, you know, we've got to really kind of shut this down. And they did, at least in the sense that they drowned it out. And I think by last night, there was much, much less of that visible and audible.
Right. We're discussing.
Yeah, Michael, I think, you know, the California Bernie Sanders supporters threatened to become the story. As Scott said at the beginning of this convention, so much media coverage went toward this raucous group of people. And I think it kind of turned. You had Marsha Fudge up there, the chairwoman of the convention, actually asking for respect from the podium, and the Leon Panetta moment from TV seemed to be sort of a turning point. A lot of commentary out there on Twitter and Facebook that they crossed the line in sort of interrupting Leon Panetta as he was trying to outline the strategy against ISIS, talking about going after Osama bin Laden, that this didn't do them any favors. And by the end of the week, what looked like it was going to be a walkout and a very sort of a bad visual for Hillary Clinton's speech just didn't happen. It was controlled. In the end, I think I was talking to Michael Soler, the spokesman for the California Democratic Party this morning. He said, you know, in the end, it's really not clear, you know, who these people were who still are not on board with the Democratic Party. And talked to, you know, Governor Gray Davis, said to just give them time. They will be there. They're passionate. But, you know, at the same time, it did show some real discord. And we'll see how that continues as we go into the campaign.
And we are discussing the Democratic National Convention, which just wrapped up last night as Hillary Clinton accepted the Democratic Party's nomination for president. Our guests are Carla Marinucci, Politico's California Playbook reporter, and Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government desk, who's joining us from the airport in Philadelphia. We want to hear from you. Give us a call and let us know your thoughts on the convention, both the conventions. You can reach us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And I just want to read one comment apropos to something you were saying, Carla. This is from Catherine, and she writes, "There needs to be some accountability for the DNC's discrediting of Bernie Sanders. This just can't be glossed over. This is a major wrongdoing. Much of the responsibility for determining how this shakes out lies with the media, and DNC favoritism is already being treated like yesterday's news or worse. It's like somehow bad manners to mention it. Is there something the public can do to support the media in being more accountable and having more courage?" Scott, I think you had something to say just a moment ago.
Well, if they want to do something to support the media, they could make a pledge to KQED, I guess.
Not sure that's, you know, that's the direction the question was going, but.
No, I know. I was just going to say, the timing, and one of the reasons the convention got off to such a rocky start is just, the release of those emails by WikiLeaks, and then the firing, essentially, of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. First, she was out as chair of the convention, and then a few hours later, she announced she was resigning altogether. That was on Sunday. And so I wouldn't say there's no accountability. I do think there will be some other staff let go. Those email, did not put them in a good light. And I think that, the Sanders supporters and Bernie Sanders in particular will make sure that that happens. And, I think Hillary Clinton, and you heard it last night, I think she's really gotten the message. These young people, and they're not all young, but supporters of Bernie Sanders, they were very passionate about a lot of things, including transparency and, you know, having a level playing field in the party. And I think that those messages did get through, not just to Hillary Clinton, but to the leadership of the party as well.
Well, let's go to a Bernie Sanders supporter. Richard in Millbrae, you are on Forum.
Yes, well, a strong Bernie Sanders supporter got tons of emails about fighting for the platform. And unfortunately, the platform doesn't matter. I've been on this game for 30 years. If the platform fight is a way to keep the movement going, then it was a good tactic. But no one should be deluded into thinking it's going to affect our next president.
So what are your plans, Richard, moving forward?
I'm mostly interested in seeing the momentum that Sanders generated become a permanent movement to try to reform the Democratic Party, if that's possible, at the grassroots level.
All right, Richard, thanks for your comment. Scott and or Carla, we did hear, obviously, Hillary talking a lot about some issues that Bernie Sanders certainly has also talked a lot about. How are we going to hear, and at times sounding a little bit Trumpian in terms of big banks and Wall Street. How is that going to play out? And another thing I wanted to ask both of you, Hillary Clinton now has to be personable on one hand and tough on the other in terms of the war against ISIS and all that. How do you think she's going to sort of do that balancing act?
She's
on the Bernie Sanders issue, I think, you know, we did see Bill Clinton, Tim Kaine, and Hillary say, I have heard you. She devoted part of her speech last night saying your cause is our cause. Our country needs your ideas and energy. The caller's concerns about issues in the platform and so forth. She talked about college education. She did talk about how Wall Street will never again be able to sort of trump Main Street, if you will. It was a sort of a progressive agenda she laid out, and that is the challenge going forward. How do you balance that with the tough on terrorism and other aspects of this campaign? I think that is going to be the balancing act going forward for her. But she's got to satisfy, I think, the progressive left of the party, keep them on board, because as Bernie Sanders himself said, they could make the difference between Trump getting elected.
All right. I want to go to another caller, Nicole in San Rafael. She says she was undecided until the conventions and wasn't going to vote, but you were moved by Hillary. Nicole, you're on Forum.
Hi. I watched both conventions, and I really had been undecided until watching through both of them, and my kids watched with me. And up until last night, listening to Hillary and actually through the entire convention with all of the amazing speeches that were given, it really helped me to sort of get past this feeling of being put off by Hillary from what's been sort of created in the media of her hardness and all of that, and really gave me better insight into what she's really done for our country and for all of the people of our country. So I feel like it helped me to make this decision, and I feel like I'm probably going to get out there and help to campaign for her at this point.
And let me ask you, did Chelsea Clinton also sort of help draw you into who Hillary is a person?
Yeah, I think more than her speech was the video that they showed. I wasn't particularly impressed with Chelsea's speech. I was much more moved by Michelle Obama's speech, to be honest. But I think that, you know, really kind of getting a feel for what type of mom she was and the type of childhood that she had did help a lot. I'm middle class and I live in Marin County, but, you know, we have our struggles just as everyone else does. And I do feel that Hillary is going to be looking out for everyone. And Trump, I wasn't going to vote for him anyway. I was more on the I may not vote at all. But I'm definitely going to vote for Hillary.
All right, Nicole, thanks. Thanks for your call. I want to go to a listener's comment here, another Bernie supporter. Why does KQED keep suggesting that the only thing Bernie supporters don't like about Hillary is that she needs to be more approachable, as though there is no substance to their disdain for her? I think the a lot of Bernie supporters out there who I think are going to definitely continue the push, however they do. Scott, your thoughts on what we're going to see in the coming weeks. I expect we will see Bernie Sanders on the campaign trail at some point.
I think so. You know, there was a very small event that Barbara Lee put on Tuesday, and it was with Bernie Sanders and the delegates from Barbara Lee's district. So there were only about, you know, there were 50 people there or so. And along with Bernie Sanders was Jesse Jackson and Elijah Cummings, the congressman from Maryland, African-American as well. And it was a very intimate setting, and they talked so passionately about the importance of this election, and Jesse Jackson in particular, linking it to the civil rights struggle and what happened in 1968 when the party broke apart and Nixon ended up getting elected, and the same in 2000 when Ralph Nader ran. And I think that those kinds of conversations, not necessarily with Jesse Jackson, but among sort of people like Barbara Lee and her constituents, I think that those are happening probably all or will be all across the country. You know, but Hillary has a tough road to hoe because she wants to be the change candidate, but she's also running for essentially the third term of Obama. And, you know, she did a good job, I think, last night of talking about what she would do different, and she's going to need to do that in the coming weeks. And then finally, I would say just the one unknown is always, you know, world events. And unfortunately, these things have become so common. And, you know, they do help Donald Trump when there's a terrorism attack. I think it reminds people or reignites that fear that he's running on.
Right. I want to go to another caller, Anna in San Francisco, who was actually at the Democratic National Convention earlier this week. Anna, you are on Forum.
Yeah, hey, thank you. The one thing I wanted to mention was, you know, on Monday night, I think a lot of people really wanted to hear what Bernie had to say, and, you know, me in particular. And it was striking to me the level of coordination in terms of disrupting his speech by, in fact, Bernie supporters. I mean, they had these kind of, you know, a sitting in front or right behind one, so you could see, like, this kind of text message coordination of disruption. And it was really just disappointing because I think you had this massive collection of, you know, active Democratic Party members. And I think that it was such an important moment for everybody to kind of come together. And the fact that, you know, people were just screaming and booing him and, you know, this is their guy, just really left a bad taste in my mouth. And I feel for their level of activism, but I just don't think it was a very constructive action that they took that night.
All right, Anna, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Jane in Berkeley. Hi, Jane, you are on Forum.
Hi. You know, we're several months away from the election, and I'm already tired of listening to the same pundits go over the same talking points with slight variations. And when are we going to hear from the representative diversity we all claim to celebrate? And as for Hillary's personability, I don't want her to be a grandma. I want her to be president. And if she's going to drop everything to go play googly eyes on FaceTime with her grandchild, I'm not voting for her. So forget this personable stuff. It's ridiculous.
Jane, thanks for your call. Scott, thoughts on that in terms of moving forward?
Well, you know, just really quickly, how much time have male presidents spent playing golf?
All right.
You know, so if we've got a president that plays with the grandkids, you know, that's okay.
All right, Scott. Scott Shaver, KQED, thank you very much. Carla Marinucci of Politico, thank you too. And next, we're going to be talking about the situation in Turkey and as the are more arrests underway and possibly on the move towards a kind of dictatorship. That will be next on Forum. We'll have a couple of guests with us. And stay tuned.